Although half English born, I had very little contact with England until I was dispatched in my early teens to a school near Runnymede on the River Thames, where on a warm summer afternoon in 1965, I encountered Grimsby Man. Admittedly, there had been journeys by boat and an eye-watering, grit-spitting steam train to London, where Bill and Ben, the flowerpot men, entertained me in an aunt's house on television, a novelty to me. I fell asleep to the honking of the river police launches patrolling the Thames at Barnes Bridge. Another train journey took us to Worthing on the south coast and grandparents. My grandfather, Sidney, tall and bespectacled, had survived the trenches in the First War. He drove a Woolsey, which carried a whiff of the walnut in the dashboard. Although I never heard him sing, he had apparently a fine tenor voice and claimed, without any hard evidence to back it up, descent from our very own bard, Tom Moore. As a widower with a two-year-old daughter, my mother, Sidney had remarried before the war broke out. My mother and his second wife had an edgy relationship. From Worthing, we went inland to deepest Sussex to stay with a bluff uncle, a countryman to his fingertips, who grew carnations under glass. His two sons, my cousins, older than I, collected butterflies, played rugby, and were flummoxed by having to entertain a younger Irish relative. It was only when I arrived from abroad at an eccentric school at Seaford on the south coast, not far from Worthing, that I was introduced to the mindset and values from which Middle England is crafted. Presided over by a rotund headmaster known as Piggy and his wife, they had discovered a lucrative niche in patching up children, mostly of expatriate parents, whose education had somehow fallen between the cracks. Our days began with an early morning run, led by an Anglo-Irish teacher with a Norman-sounding surname, along the South Downs and up to Beachy Head, already claimed in verse for England in Chesterton's The Rolling English Road. This was followed by a cold shower and a daily dose of malt extract to make up for our nutrient-free meals, all the goodness having been boiled out of them. At weekends, I was more or less free to roam, unsupervised, by bicycle over the downs, to villages with unfamiliar names, Alfriston, Litlington, Lunnington, and Pidding Ho. As the only Catholic and Irish to boot, I became used to making a solitary trek to Saturday evening mass. Thus, the following year found me at a secondary boarding school manned by Jesuits, which was sandwiched between Windsor Great Park and the Thames at Runnymede. The 750th anniversary of the signing at Runnymede of the Great Charter of Magna Carta on the 15th of June 1215 was celebrated that summer. At the insistence of his barons, many of them from the north, King John had been forced to trammel his absolute powers as monarch. Over 1,000 people, bishops, barons, knights, squires and their attendants, had milled around the plain to witness the event. In a final twist, Archbishop Stephen Langton, smarting at John's refusal to appoint him to the See of Canterbury, added two late clauses which have survived to this day. The first was that no free man could be arrested without trial, now known as habeas corpus. The second was that access to justice should be neither delayed nor denied. As I joined the crush of celebrants walking along the towpath, passing the Bells of Ouseley, a riverside pub, towards the plain at Runnymede, a man in walking gear and boots struck up a conversation. He had made the five-hour journey that morning from Grimsby, the fishing port in Lincolnshire, on the south bank of the Humber estuary, which is fed by the rivers Ouse and Trent on their way to the sea in the coastal heartland of the north. The Queen had travelled from Windsor Castle, 3 miles away, and Jackie Kennedy from America, to unveil a memorial overlooking the site to the late president, slain a bare 18 months previously. For Grimsby Man, this was no mere day trip. This was a pilgrimage. He had high hopes of an imminent people's revolt. Us in the North have had enough of being ruled by those Southerners in London. Aye, lad, we want our freedom. Mark my words, we'll march south soon enough. Just you wait and see. I wonder now, what had really inspired Grimsby Man to make his pilgrimage? Was it the symbol of power exercised by those northern barons from the Wash and the Humber on their wayward king? No doubt it was also the prospect of Englishmen and women, good and true, assembling together on the very ground where the king had been forced to give way over three quarters of a millennium ago. The presence of Queen Elizabeth as successor in a long, uninterrupted line of kings and queens since the time of King John served as a reminder, perhaps, of the power of the people over despots. And to top it all, the elegant modernism of Jackie Kennedy, widow of a Democratic president who hailed from Irish roots, must have played its part.